We're glad to have Brother Ron Wilson and his wife Cora with us this morning. Many of you will probably remember Ron was with us back in the fall, and we're glad to have him back. I really enjoyed his series of lessons that he did in the fall, a couple of lessons that he did on the Old Testament. And he will be continuing in that vein this morning. Our theme for the series this week is Lessons from the Schoolmaster, and he will be tying all that together as the week progresses. Ron is a 1972 graduate of the Memphis School of Preaching. He is the co-director of the Central Carolina School of Preaching in Sumter, along with Brother Melvin Sapp. He has been teaching there, however, since 1996, but he's been co-director and full-time with the school for the past 2 years. Prior to that, along with his time at the school, he was also working in Hemingway, South Carolina. So we're looking forward to hearing Ron. I won't take any more of your time. Come and bring our lesson.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see each and every one. Beautiful day, isn't it?
Yes.
It's always a beautiful day if you're a faithful member of the Church of Christ. Otherwise, well, I guess no use in going into that, is it? Our theme for this week, or for the first part of the week anyway, Lessons from the Schoolmaster. I don't know who came up with the theme, but it's a very clever one. I was kind of disappointed I saw it. I should have come up with that myself. But it's a very clever theme. And it's not about me. I'm not the schoolmaster the theme is talking about. And we'll get to that in Galatians chapter 3. That's the schoolmaster that one has in mind. Let's look at Galatians. A couple of things before we get over to chapter 3. The background of the book of Galatians, the many implications in the book that lets us derive this information, is Paul went through the churches of the province of Galatia, preaching the gospel and establishing churches. But you remember Paul was rather aggressive in his evangelism, and he kept moving from one place to the other, so he had to leave the churches in Galatia for a while. And it seemed like just as soon as he got out of town, some Judaizers came right in behind him. A lot of implications in the chapter, and also if you a background for this is Acts chapter 11 and Acts chapter 15. There were some members of the Church of Christ, some of them were sincere, and there are others who came in under false pretenses for different reasons, trying to subvert the church, trying to get the members back into Judaism. But the book of Romans, Galatians, and Hebrews are some prominent parts in the New Testament. If you want to know how to, let's say, defeat the false doctrine of Judaism, those are the books you want to study. So the book of Galatians, we might say, is a treatise against the false doctrine of Judaism. The greatest problem that the church has ever suffered since its inception was Judaism. The church had more problems in the first century with persecution from the Jews than any other problem they've had in the last 2,000 years. This is the background of Matthew chapter 24. In Matthew 23, Jesus told the Jews that God, for the last 1,500 years, I'm paraphrasing now, had sent them prophets and teachers and so forth, and they had spurned and rejected all of them. And God had finally had enough of that. His patience had been wearing thin, and now it had reached its limit. And so God determined by AD 70, he was going to put an end to all the rebellion of the Jews. Galatians, the book of Galatians, looks forward to that day coming. The book of Galatians, let's look in the first chapter. The first chapter is about the apostle himself. It's rather amazing, I think, for some of us who try to be faithful in the church and reading the books of Corinthians and Galatians, that Paul established these churches, and as soon as he left, some of the people, because of smooth words and fair speeches of some false teachers who came in behind Paul, began to believe some of the things that they were telling, that Paul wasn't really an apostle. Now, Paul was not one of the original 12 chosen by Jesus, but nonetheless, he was an apostle. We'll see it in this book. To the churches in Galatia and also to the church in Corinth, the proof that Paul was an apostle, he left behind him. He laid hands on some of those people and imparted spiritual gifts to them. So it is amazing to me on this side of the coin how in the world that these people who had miraculous gifts in the church of Christ in the first century, and that was possible only because Paul the apostle had come through that town, how in the world could they turn back to the Judaizers? And Paul addresses the Galatians, "Oh, foolish Galatians, who had bewitched you?" They had started off on such a good foot, but there's a tremendous lesson in this for us today, people. We do not have miraculous gifts in the church today. There are no miracles anymore since the first century, and I'm sure we are all aware of that. But if those people in the first century who had miraculous gifts in the church would allow us false teachers by smooth words and fair speeches to turn them away from the gospel, we better take warning. And there are churches of Christ, unfortunately, in our time that are being turned away from the truth of the gospel that Paul preached, and simply by the same things they did in the first century, people flapping their lips with a false doctrine. How is it that people can learn the truth and then somebody come along with error and dissuade us away from that? Well, it happened in the first century, and it's been happening ever since that time as well. So Paul, in the first chapter, kind of briefly gives a little defense of himself as an apostle to the Galatians. Of course, they should not have needed this, but he did. He begins the epistle to the Galatians. In the very first verse, Paul, an apostle, by telling the Galatians and reinforcing that he was an apostle, they should be aware of this, then that means he had divine authority behind everything that he claimed. Tremendous difference in the apostles and every other member of the church that has ever lived. The apostles had the delegated authority from God himself to legislate for the church. You remember Jesus told Peter when he made the good confession in Matthew 16, he told Peter, as an apostle, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. That is, he's giving Peter, of course, that includes the rest of the apostles as well, the authority to legislate for the church. So we learn in 2 John 9, whoever transgresses and does not abide in the doctrine of Christ does not have God. Well, that's the same doctrine recorded in Acts 2 and verse 42, where the early church continued steadfast in the apostle doctrine. No difference in the apostles' doctrine and the doctrine of Jesus Christ. When Paul wrote something, contrary to some of the modern feminist group, well, Paul was a woman hater. No, Paul wasn't a woman hater. If you look closely at some of the things Paul said about women, he exalted women far above what the feminist groups today. The feminist groups today are trying to detract from women. But that's another subject. I'm getting a little away. Paul, in the first chapter of the epistle to the Galatians, is affirming, reaffirming, we might say, that he is an apostle. So he begins the letter by saying, Paul, an apostle, and not from men. That is, this office of an apostle that he held, he wasn't given this by some church council. Bunch of men didn't get together who liked Paul and said, Paul, we're going to make you an apostle. No, that's not the way it happened. Now, Paul was also an apostle of the church at Antioch, simply because an apostle means one who is sent. But Barnabas was also an apostle of the church of Antioch from that perspective. But Paul is talking about his divine office of apostleship. So he said, Paul, an apostle not from men nor through man, but through Jesus Christ. You remember the story in Acts 9 where Jesus himself personally appeared to Paul on the road to Damascus. And the reason that Jesus appeared to Paul was not to give him any information about the gospel, not to tell him how he might be saved from his sin, but simply that Paul might be a witness of the resurrected Jesus to qualify him as an apostle. So Paul has the authority from God, from his son Jesus, and he has miraculous powers given him by the Holy Spirit. He is an apostle. Of course, these people should not have doubted that. Down in verse 6, Paul says, I marvel. He is amazed. He had expected something different from these people that Paul had personally taught these. Paul had personally, as an apostle, delivered the gospel. And now he's saying in verse 6, I marvel that you are turning away. They have changed their mind in regard to the truth from God and gone in a different direction. Again, 2 John 9, whoever transgresses and abides not in the doctrine of Christ does not have God. There ought to be some type of serious import to that verse somewhere that just stands out in our minds. If we don't stay with the gospel, we leave God. You cannot separate the gospel of God and God. So Paul was amazing. Surely he had taught them better than that. He said that you turn to what in verse 6? To a different gospel. But then he adds quickly in verse 7, which is not another. So he's using this a little bit sarcastically. You turn to a different gospel. There's only one good news. But they've turned to something else. So a little bit sarcasm. You turn to a different gospel. Then he said, which is not another, because there's only one gospel. Even though there may ingrained in this false teaching parts of the gospel, it's not really the gospel. And so he continues in verse 7, which is not another, but there are some who trouble you and want to pervert, corrupt, defile, twist the gospel of Christ. Then in verse 8 is a warning down through the ages, but even if we, when Paul says we, he's talking about his office of apostleship. Even if the apostles, and in Galatians chapter 2, we'll see where one of the apostles did depart a little bit. If we, even if an apostle, or even if an angel, a messenger coming down who is supposed to be God's messenger, even if an angel coming from heaven preach any other gospel to you than what we have preached. Paul said, I have given you the truth. And if anybody comes along, even if another apostle comes along and tells you something different than what I told you, well, there's consequences for that. Paul said at the end of verse 8, let him be accursed. To be accursed is to have a curse brought on you. You want to get an idea of what it is to be cursed? Latter part of Mark 16:16, he who does not believe will be damned in the King James Version. That's what it means to be cursed. If there's a divine curse placed upon a person, then that person is going to hell. And I'm not using that in a vulgar sense whatsoever, but that's just the truth of it. Again, Mark 16:15, go into all the world, preach the gospel to every creature. And there's a contrast between two positions. He who believes and is baptized will be saved. The opposite of that is he who does not believe will be damned. That's what it means. That's what Paul is talking about. If somebody preaches another gospel other than that which has been delivered by the Holy Spirit to those inspired men in the first century, they will go to hell. There is no alternative. When we leave this life, there's only one or two places to go. There's no limbo land. You either go to a place of rest or a place of torment. So Paul is telling them, you need to consider this. If you turn away from the gospel that I delivered to you, there's only tragic consequences that are going to follow. He repeats that somewhat in verse 9, because this is a serious message. As we've said before, now I say again, he is emphasizing the consequences of turning away from the gospel, and even more so if you teach another gospel. As we've said before, so now I say again, if anyone preaches any other gospel to you than what you have received, let him be accursed. Two times. Let him be accursed. Verse 10, do I now persuade men or God? Or do I seek to please men? If I still please men, I would not be a bondservant of Christ. These are against the false accusations of those people who were intimating, perhaps even directly claiming, well, you know, he's not really an apostle. He didn't really travel around with Jesus for those 3.5 years during his ministry. And some people, because of various reasons, might get caught up in those errors. So in verses 11 through 17, Paul deals with his calling. I make known to you, the brethren, that the gospel which was preached. Incidentally, I'm reading from the New King James Version. So if you have the King James Version, it may be a word different here and there. I make known to you, brethren, that the gospel which was preached by me, and in fact, Romans 2:16, Paul refers to it as my gospel, is not according to man. Difference between human messages and God's message. God's message cannot be changed. You can take a message from man and you can change it to fit the audience. And if you don't believe that, that's exactly what denominations do. Why are denominations different from each other? Why will one person go to one denomination and not another? Because there's something in that denomination that pleases them. Here is the bottom line for anybody going to any false religious group, people, because they're looking for something to satisfy their own lust. And those lusts, it may not be anything sexual, stealing, and so forth, but it's something up here that they want other than what's in this book. They're not satisfied with what God has given. And so they go looking for something to please their own sensibilities. And I'm not trying to pick on anyone. I don't know anybody who all is in the audience and so forth. But the bottom line is, if I'm in the Baptist church and I don't particularly like their doctrine about baptism, I don't think a person has to go under the water, then I'll go to the Methodist church. And then if I stay in there for a while and they teach something I don't like, I'll go check out another denomination. You understand what I'm saying? There's either one or two ways you can go. Number one, God's way or man's way. Jesus said, I am the way. There's only one way to God, but if you want to go man's way, there are thousands of different roads that go in the other direction. And depending upon your own personality, likes and dislikes, so forth, you can choose any one you want. And in fact, if you don't like any of them, you start your own. There are piles of them popping up every day because they're not happy with what's out there, so they start their own group. And not, sir.
Terminology
Exactly. And that's a misunderstanding of the mission of the apostles. Well, it certainly is. Paul defends his apostleship. There's another way he's going to do that later on. But he tells the people how he became an apostle. And it's very important, if you drop, let's drop them down. Verse 12, I neither received it from man, nor as I taught it, but it came through the revelation of Jesus Christ. In verse 17, when God made him an apostle, in verse 17, I didn't go up to Jerusalem to those who were apostles before me. Here's another affirmation of his apostleship. If Paul didn't go to Jerusalem and he spent 3 years over in Arabia, then where did he get what he was teaching? The inescapable conclusion is it had to come from God. And that's going to be confirmed in verse 18. Then after 3 years, I went up to Jerusalem to see Peter and remained with him 15 days. Verse 19, but I saw none of the other apostles except James. That is, he didn't see anybody besides Peter, but he did later on see James, the Lord's brother. There's a reason behind all of this. Concerning the things which I write to you, indeed before God, I do not lie. Paul could prove by the miracles that what he was saying was not lies. After I went into the regions of Syria and Cilicia, I was unknown by face to the churches, but they were hearing only he who formerly persecuted us, now preaches the faith which he once tried to destroy. And then down in chapter 2, after 14 years, I went up again to Jerusalem. Now in chapter 2, Paul omits his second visit to Jerusalem, which took place about AD 44, and that's around about Acts 11:30 in chapter 12. Galatians chapter 2 is in the context of the same visit that was made in Acts chapter 15. So in verse 2, he said, I went up by revelation. That is, God told him to go up there. There's a reason behind this. The reason, of course, we learn later on, is Paul was one of the reasons because there was such a, we might say, a division that actually occurred in the Church of Christ in Jerusalem over the subject of circumcision. So the Holy Spirit sent Paul, along with some others, to clear up this controversy that was going on. So in verse 2, I went up by revelation, communicated to them that gospel which I preach among the Gentiles, but privately to those who were of reputation, lest by any means I might run and run in vain. Now, after all of this, all the time that Paul had spent in the gospel, after performing the miracles that proved what he was preaching for the truth, Paul still went to the other apostles and made sure that they were all on the same page before they got into the public discussion before the people, especially in regard to this matter of circumcision. And in verse 3, not even Titus, after he'd had this discussion with other people, the apostles and others who were recognized as leaders of the faith, not even Titus, because he was a Greek, was compelled to be circumcised. They all came to the same conclusion. You don't have to be circumcised. That's not part of the law of Christ. Paul said the reason behind all of this in verse 4 was false brethren secretly brought in. That is, there were some Jews hated the church, and they pretended to be converted. They even allowed themselves to be baptized. Their whole motivation was to get into the church and try to tear the church up, try to destroy its credibility. This is not something from God. But Paul says in verse 5, we did not yield submission, though no compromises with the gospel. That's the position that Paul took. Look at verse 6. From those who seem to be something, this would include the apostles and elders, perhaps the brothers of the Lord as well, whatever they were, look what Paul said, it makes no difference to me. God shows personal favoritism to no man. For those who seemed to be something added nothing to me. Paul said, we all were preaching the same gospel. I didn't have to go to them to get any information that the Holy Spirit gave me. I'm preaching the gospel as the Holy Spirit delivered it. The other apostles are preaching the Holy Spirit as are preaching the gospel the Holy Spirit gave them the information. No difference. No difference. There's no such thing as what some of the old liberal scholars called the Petrine Gospel, the Gospel after Peter, and the Pauline Gospel. Paul and Peter preached the same thing. Not to the same people necessarily, but they preached the same message from God. And this is another affirmation of Paul's apostleship. I'm preaching the same thing as Peter, and yet you accuse me of not being like Peter. That doesn't make sense, does it? Verse 8, he who worked effectively in Peter for the apostleship, that's God. This is the source of the power that they had. He who worked effectively in verse 8 in Peter for the apostleship to the circumcised also worked effectively in me toward the Gentile. That is, it seemed like Peter in the beginning concentrated most of his effort toward the Jews. Paul, on the other hand, concentrated most of his efforts to the Gentile, but there was nothing different in the gospel that they preached. Whether they preached to Jews or Gentiles, it was the same thing. Look in verse 9. When James, this is James, the brother of the Lord, Cephas and John, Cephas, of course, is Peter and John, who were apostles, who seemed to be pillars, that is, they were prominent individuals in the church, but they are not the ones by themselves who hold up the whole church. You can't confine the gospel to these three men. That's the idea involved when it says seemed to be pillars. Now, when these prominent individuals, though, who had the reputation of preaching only the truth from God, perceived the grace that had been given to me, and this grace includes the miraculous gifts that Paul had, according to Romans 12 and verse 6, they, that is, these people who were looked upon as the entire church, as being pillars of the church, they gave me and Barnabas the right hand of fellowship. So here is a public acknowledgement. There's no difference in the gospel Paul preached and the gospel that James, Cephas, and John, and the other apostles were preaching. No difference at all. So Paul's saying, you don't have any right to be listening to people who are accusing me of not being an apostle, who are accusing me of not preaching the truth. Now, if I'm preaching the truth in regard to the matter of circumcision, that you don't need it, and these other people come in here and say you do need to be circumcised, why are you listening to those folks? I have proved to you people by laying hands on some of you, and there are some members of the churches in Galatia who could perform miracles because Paul laid hands on them. Paul said, why are you listening to those people? That's why he called them foolish Galatians later on. Verses 11 through 21 is another affirmation of his apostleship. Big problem with Peter. Verse 11, when Peter had come to Antioch, I withstood him to his face because he was to be blamed. An apostle was at fault. Here is proof that inspiration of the Holy Spirit did not keep a person from sinning. All the Holy Spirit did, number one, was deliver revelation from God into their minds. And when they spoke the gospel, they could not speak error when they were guided by the Holy Spirit. Second thing is, they had the miraculous power to confirm that what they were preaching was the truth. But he said Peter was to be blamed. The reason was, certain men came from James, verse 12, who would eat with the Gentile. When they came, he withdrew and separated himself, bearing those who were of the circumcision. And the rest of the Jews, that is the Jews in Antioch, who were members of the church, also played the hypocrite with him. They were claiming something and practicing something. Paul said even Barnabas was carried away with their hypocrisy. Verse 14, when I saw they were not straightforward about the truth of the gospel, I said to Peter, look here, before them all. Here is a public challenge to an apostle. And evidently down through the ages that most people have acknowledged as the prominent apostle in the church. Problem with Peter, everybody in the church recognized he was an apostle. Being an apostle, he had the delegated right to legislate for God. He could make laws for the church because he was an apostle. He was an ambassador from Christ, 2 Corinthians 5:18 through 20. It's like if we send an ambassador over to England, ambassador from the United States, he can go over there, whatever he tells those people, the United States is going to back him up. He can go over to England and say, look here, we're going to give y'all $500 million next month. That's law when it comes from him. Why? Because he represents the United States. The apostles were ambassadors of Christ. They represented Christ. They could make laws for Christ because Christ had given them that authority. So the problem with Peter was, well, here is an apostle who's saying, by his actions, we need to separate ourselves from the Gentiles. Now, who could tell him he was wrong? An apostle, delegated authority from Christ, an ambassador? Not many people are going to challenge that, and evidently nobody did. But Paul, he's an apostle. So being an apostle, he can challenge another apostle. Here is confirmation of his apostleship. Only an apostle can challenge another apostle because they're the only ones who could legislate. So Paul is saying before all of them, not necessarily in this sense to prove that he's an apostle. That's not the motivation for challenging Peter, but to let everybody know Peter's in the wrong. Galatians 3, what is it, verse 28, there's neither Jew nor Greek. Peter was going against that. And so Paul proved his apostleship by challenging Peter. They were not trying to say, let's go back to the law of Moses, but by their actions, they were moving back in that direction. So Paul challenged them publicly. Now, if a member of the church, and Paul was a member of the church, he was an apostle, he was also a member of the church. Now, if a member of the church can challenge an apostle publicly for error, can't we challenge people today publicly for public error? Well, let's think on that for a while. Chapter 3, he talks about the sons of God. And that's where I want to get to, so I don't have a whole lot of time. There is an implication in the book of Galatians that the Judaizers were coming into the churches of Galatia and saying, now, that's fine if you want to obey the gospel that Paul preached, but if you want to be a son of God, you got to do that through the law of Moses. And so Paul challenged that. In fact, he offset that in Galatians chapter 3, verses 26 through 27. He begins in chapter 3 and verse 1, foolish Galatians. You know what a foolish Galatian is? Somebody's acting like a fool. Why would he call them foolish Galatians? You know what Psalm 14:1 says? The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. And if you look at that very closely, there is italicized. So in the Hebrew, in Psalm 14:1, the psalmist is actually saying, the fool has said in his heart, no God. A fool is somebody who knows what God says and says, no, I don't want that. I'm not going to do that. The Galatians had been delivered the gospel by Paul. They knew what they were supposed to do. So he says in verse 1, oh, foolish Galatians, who have bewitched you? They knew what the truth was, and because of the Judaizers, they were turning away from that truth. That's why they were fools. It takes a fool to turn away from the truth of God. Maybe that'll help us stay with the truth. In verse 2, look here. Look how foolish their actions were in verse 2. This only I want to learn from you. Did you receive the Spirit by the works of the law? This has reference to miraculous gifts. Remember in Acts chapter 8, verse 18, Simon saw that through the laying on of the apostles' hand, the Holy Spirit was given. That is miraculous gifts were given. In Acts 19, verse 6, Paul laid hands on some people in Ephesus, and they received the Holy Spirit and spoke in tongues. So he has reference to miraculous gifts by the Holy Spirit in verse 2. How did you get these? By the works of the law? Here are Judaizers coming in and say, you've got to practice the law. What have they got to prove their position? You see their foolishness? Paul had come to the churches in Galatia, established the churches, and before he left, in order that the church might be edified and continue to grow, he laid hands on some of those so they could have miraculous teaching, make sure they're going in the right direction. Paul said, where'd you get those gifts from? You got people that can call blind people to see? You got people in the church can raise folks from the dead, can speak in tongues that they've never learned, and other people can interpret those tongues? Where did you get those? Did the Judaizers, when they came in, did they have miraculous gifts to prove what they were saying was true? Could they lay hands on you and give you miraculous gifts? No. They had smooth words and fair speeches. That's all they had. And the church practicing miraculous gifts were fooled by these people. You see the danger for us people? We don't have miraculous gifts. If those people could be fooled, then we need to take caution as well. Paul said, are you so foolish? In verse 3, having begun in the Spirit, that is, they had a spiritual beginning, but now they were going back to something that is fleshly. Are you now being made perfect by the flesh? How can you be made perfect by the flesh? Hebrews 10, verse 4, it's not possible for the blood of bulls and goats to take away sin. Where is perfection if you have sin? What can the Judaizers do to take away your sin? Nothing. Paul said in Romans 1:16, I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ. It is the power of God unto salvation. The Judaizers don't have anything to remove those sins. The Judaizers don't have the truth. The Judaizers don't have miraculous gifts. In fact, what do they have that you were so foolish you want to leave the truth in the church and go follow up behind them? Then he begins to make some points in regards to that the Old Testament could not do things that the gospel can now do. So he brings up Abraham in verse 7. Only those who are of faith are sons of Abraham. You want to be a real son of Abraham? You want to be a spiritual heir of Abraham? Well, the Judaizers don't have this. They are physical descendants of Abraham, but they're not necessarily his spiritual descendants. In verses 10 through 14, I'm jumping ahead a little bit because of the time, Paul lets us know that the law, that is, if you go back to following the law of Moses, you bring yourself under a curse. And there's a reason for this. Verse 10, as many as are of the works of the law are under the curse. What's the curse? Well, there wasn't anything wrong with the law. Jesus Christ kept the law of Moses perfectly to prove that we can keep the law perfectly, or that they could keep the law perfectly. But the problem was, as Paul explains in Romans chapter 7, that once you violate that law, there's nothing in there that can remove that violation. This is the tremendous blessing we have with Christ. This is why Jesus said in Matthew 26:28, this is my blood of the new covenant, which is shed for many for remission. What? Remission of sin. That's something you didn't have under the old covenant. Something they did not have under the old covenant. So Paul is telling me, why do you want to go back to that? Now, if you follow Paul's line of reasoning, when he gets down to verse 19 then, well, if the law can't take away sin, the law is gone, then why in the world did God ever give a law? What in the world, of what use is the law? It don't seem to me like it has any value. Verse 19, Paul said, what purpose then does the law serve? It was added because of transgression, that is to identify sin, to expose the nature of sin, to impress punishment of sin upon the people who wanted to pay any attention, to show people the principle of separation that sin brings upon people, and to show that man can't save himself. So there were a lot of valuable things about the law. It was added because of transgression. How long did it last? Till the seed should come. Galatians 3:16, he said that seed is Christ. Then he moves on further down. Let me get to this before I quit. In verse 24, here is another purpose of the law. Therefore, the law was our tutor. The law was our schoolmaster to bring us to Christ that we might be justified by faith. Primary reason for the law, Paul is saying, for the nation of the Jews, is like the law kind of took them by the hand like a little child and led them down through 1,500 years to the Messiah should come. And then the law, its purpose was to turn those people over to the new covenant, the new kingdom of Christ. Problem was, majority of people rejected. How much time I got? Am I out of it? Somebody tell me.
It's time.
It's time? Okay. Maybe I said something to help you along the way a little bit. I appreciate your attention and the comments that were made. Thank you very much.